direct. From Guano Productions headquarters in the Los Angeles Underground, it's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex. It's like honey in your ear holes. Hey, welcome back to The Superiority Complex, everybody. It's your new favorite podcast, and it's our last show of the year. So, to do something special, I thought I'd reset it. We take it back to the way things started off at the start of the year. So, to my right is John Sandy.
Howdy.
Back from a two-week hiatus.
Hiatus.
And then that little snurfle you just heard.
Snurfle.
Is our friend Tawny. She's back.
Hi.
She's back. She's
I'm
on
psyched.
Break. She's pumped.
We haven't seen her since. I have next week off, too.
Well, I'm already scheduled.
If you want me.
You've already scheduled it.
I've already scared.
Look, I'm feeling real dejected these last
Yeah,
few
well,
months.
I'm glad to help you.
You've always got a place here.
Just going to take me in.
Hey, John, first of all.
Yes. You're like, yeah, first of all, it's not your show. I'm the one that says, you've always got a place here. Yeah. Tawny, you've always got a place here.
And we have a special guest in the studio today who may or may not, join in, but he's going to say hello right now. His name is Devin.
Hello, greetings.
He's from one of the local high schools here. We're not going to say which one. We want to protect Devin's identity, but he's working on an intern. No, I keep saying intern, mentorship here at the shop. And for whatever reason, he wanted to sit in on a podcast. And for whatever reason, Sam thought it would be great to put a 17-year-old in a room full of middle-aged people talking about Carrie Fisher.
Do I count as middle-aged?
No, that's what I was going to say. You're not really middle-aged because you're 35.
37.
If we're middle-aged.
What counts? 37, I'm okay
yeah.
with it.
Oh, yeah.
That
I'm
means
okay.
I'm going to live to be 102. You
know? No, you're not middle-aged yet. You're young. You're youthful.
I'm the very, like, the beginning. Like, some when you look at, like, what the defining years of millennials
are. I say middle-aged is 40.
I'm still, like, some people put me in millennial group, but I don't feel like I'm there yet. Like, I'm in the middle. I'm in that 90210 generation.
Don't ever say that again.
I'm sorry. I can't help it.
Let me see your sideburns.
It's what was happening.
He doesn't know. See, it's a reference. He doesn't know. We're just going to keep doing that. And then make him feel bad for not getting it. What are you, stupid? You don't have the internet?
And then, like, a couple weeks ago, we were doing Streets of San Francisco. And the entire audience went click.
Click. Speaking of shows that no one will remember... I was on Hulu, and I discovered on Hulu Plus Space 1999, the entire run.
With Martin Landau and Barbara Bain.
With Martin Landau and Barbara Bain.
Really awful.
The most gloriously boring television show you'll ever watch.
I know. It's the antithesis of Star Trek. It's like, God, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
What?
It's just a bunch of – it's British, so there's that. So it's just people standing around in a room talking.
And I think it's the guys that did the Thunderbirds, but you don't get the marionettes.
No.
You get people instead of marionettes.
I'll tell you what.
It's British.
I will tell you what. Barbara Bain's acting, as good as she was on Mission Impossible, she is every bit a marionette in Space 1999.
Yeah,
just nothing registers.
They're not great scripts either. I mean, Martin Landau's a hell of an actor. Those were not good scripts.
No.
You know, it's...
Watch it. It's
I've never
awesome.
Heard of it. Sorry.
It was what I always saw as a kid was the model of the ship because the ship looked really cool. But the idea behind Space 99 is so implausible. It's awesome. It's 1999. So this is shot in 1975. It's 1999.
Ooh, the future.
It's the future. We have a moon base where we store all of our nuclear waste from Earth. So one day it builds up this giant magnetic charge and it's a giant explosion on the moon, hurls the moon
like
out
the
of
moon?
Orbit. The moon.
Our moon.
Out of orbit. So everybody that's on this base is now stuck on this hurtling moon through space. So instead of being on a ship, the moon is the ship. Yeah.
And from there it goes downhill.
And from there it goes downhill. You got to see it. But the thing is, there's two things that are notable. The first thing you notice is how expensive it was because the sets are huge.
Right. It was probably like Shepperton or
something. It was shot at Pinewood. Studios.
Wow.
So when you look at other stuff from the 70s, like early Doctor Who, you're like, oh, yeah, this is leagues ahead. It still looks crappy. But it's leagues ahead of other stuff that was on TV.
I mean,
TV.
The model work is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But as soon as they get in a room and start talking, you're like, ugh.
It's a bunch of veterans. It's a bunch of veterans from 2001. And a lot of the guys went on to work on Alien and Empire Strikes Back.
There
so it's,
you, go.
You know, but this, yeah, it's terrible. And
is
Barbara,
it like really slow?
Yes.
Okay.
And
so
Barbara
pokey.
Bain and Martin Landau are the leads. And they're the only two Americans in the show. And Martin Landau's fine. But Barbara Bain is just just wooden. Like she's supposed to be the doctor, and she's just like, "What? Yes, he seems to have all the symptoms of space madness."
Space.
Yeah, it's
space
awful. But I can't stop watching it. I'm on episode 4.
It's kind of so bad it's good. Yeah.
It's so bad it's bad, but I can't stop watching it.
I just watched the space madness episode the
of Ren and Stimpy
because I was trying to remember the exact wording of the jolly candy like button. Because once again, I found myself trying to explain to someone why I had just said the jolly candy like. Button. I was like, well.
Did you find it?
Yeah. Oh, it's easy to find.
See, Devin, isn't this fun sitting around with old people talking?
It's so good. It's the best.
But you ever heard of Ren and Stimpy?
Of course I have.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, you stupid old man. Of course.
You ever heard of the streets of San Francisco?
Oh, no.
Beretta? No, you stupid old man. Of course.
Rockford Files.
Love it. Look at Renee's just Renee's tuned out. Renee is back. I didn't even introduce Renee. He's back at the producer's chair.
Yes, I am.
What are you reading there, Renee?
I'm reading the instruction books for the
He's reading instruction books.
Yeah.
For it's preferable
the deck to building game to the
to the
DC game. See, I'm so like happy
DC
I got it.
DC deck building game. That seems like an awesome gift.
Yeah.
That's really something. That was a real thoughtful act.
I'm kidding. Okay. So
it's one thing in there.
The big.
I haven't seen.
He hasn't cut open the deck yet.
Yeah.
We'll get to this. We're actually going to play around to that.
We're not.
There are five of us though. So the big news, obviously, aside from Space 99 being on Hulu, is that yesterday we lost our favorite princess, Princess Leia. Prince Carrie Fisher, at 60 years old, passed away. She had a heart attack on a flight from London to Los Angeles last week and was hospitalized for several days and then yesterday passed on. So when I woke up yesterday, my first thing I got was a text was, "Oh my God, are you absolutely devastated?" Mm-hmm. And I said, what could this be in reference
to? You know, I was like, can you imagine if this had happened earlier in the year before we were so numbed?
Right.
Yeah. Like, I know. Everybody else.
She's like person number, 2000.
But I'll tell you
just
what. This
tack her on to the end of the list.
But this is really one that kind of shook me out of that. Because it.
Yeah, if you're of a certain age, this is a biggie here.
Because it wasn't just the fact that she was in Star Wars. It's the last few years she had kind of made a resurgence and she had become this voice of reason in mm-hmm. Hollywood. And she was speaking out against the stigma of mental illness. And she was very open about mm-hmm. at a time when people like her mother, Debbie Reynolds, you didn't talk about stuff like that. You know, mm-hmm. you didn't talk openly about being a drug addict and just, And
always so funny about it.
And always so funny. And
self-deprecating.
That was the thing. She was one of those people she was witty. She was as witty as can be. And she's one of those people you just look up to and you go, I will never be that cool. I will never be as cool as Carrie Fisher.
Well, I mentioned to you that my my mom, when I was a little kid, I remember seeing ads or trailers for Postcards from the Edge and wanting to see it. And my mom, very early on, I remember knowing that Carrie Fisher wasn't, I knew that she was Princess Leia, but I knew of her, I thought of her as a writer, somebody who was really funny.
Yeah.
And my mom always was like, she's a writer. She's really funny. Like, she's so smart. And that's how I always have thought of her. I don't think I saw the original, the original first Star Wars until I was a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my grandma took me to see Jedi when I was four at the cheap theater.
Yeah.
A couple of years after it had come out or something.
This is like her eighth book.
Yeah.
And
I've never read any of her stuff, but I've always in the back of my head, it's always she's this badass writer lady who is hilarious.
Yeah. Her one woman show, which is called Wishful Drinking, is on HBO Go right now. And if you haven't seen it, check it out because it's really her, it's very funny, but it's also kind of cathartic for her. And mm-hmm. she talks a lot about, her parents' marriage, and she has a whole flow chart of how all the people that Eddie Fisher married, because the whole thing that launches it was that her daughter had a flirtation with, I guess, Elizabeth Taylor's grandson. And so there was she's are we related? So there's this whole thing where they're trying to figure out if her kid and Elizabeth Taylor's granddaughter are. But she goes into the whole thing about her mom and mm-hmm. she does these really great impersonations of when she impersonates her mom, it's really fantastic. She'll just she's like, my mother always says, and then she does this Debbie Reynolds voice. It's really, really cool. But it's just someone that can. someone that has the not the self-awareness, but someone who has their wits about them enough to just kind of put their whole life in perspective. Mm-hmm. Because what a crazy – at 19, you're like the biggest – you're in this – the biggest thing in the world, you know. Basically something that changed entertainment forever. And, you know, to have that perspective, to be able to look back on that and then kind of know where you kind of gone wrong in your life and say, this caused this and I went from here to here to here. Mm-hmm. And she does that a lot.
And she said if I hadn't been a movie star, I still would have been like bipolar and dealing with things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She said I would just been in another job. You know, it's just that you have a different set of complications if depending on what job you have. She said I still would have had the same, you know, problems and challenges, but it's just a whole new wrinkle that you're doing it while
we all get to watch it happening.
Yeah, exactly. You get to see it happening on screen.
Yeah, as a writer, I think some people know, but not a lot, that she had a second career as a script doctor. They would just send her.
Oh, I didn't know.
Send her these scripts, and she would just punch up scripts. So that's what she was doing for most of the '90s.
I didn't know that
she was punching up scripts, and she was. She was working on things like, I think it comes up on the show a lot, Hook was like one of her first, where they brought her in to say, like, can you fix this? Mm-hmm. And so she kind of became like a go-to in Hollywood to fix, you know, certain things. So I love that about her. I love her that she's just kind of like, okay, now I'm, you know, and I don't think she was ever, you know, she was famous, but she was never one of those people that embraced being a celebrity. At least the vapid parts of being a celebrity. Like, you didn't see her.
She could see through it.
She could see through it.
She could and there see was through a, all the bullshit.
There was a great article that the posted yesterday that said.
She was in on the joke.
She was in on the joke.
Yeah.
She was always in on the joke. Yeah. She understood, like, where she was.
What was silly about
what
the situation.
What was silly about it. And that the fact that she became this iconic. But at the same time, she loved the idea that people kind of looked up to her and she could use that as a. She could use that as kind of a mouthpiece to say, hey, look, you know, it's okay to be mentally ill, or it's okay to, you know.
Yeah.
She was never my friend Angel and I refer to people who sort of don't do that as deludenoids. Like, oh, what a deludenoid. And it was like, she was never a deludenoid. Like, she never
bought into the idea that it was something special about her.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that she did something. It was just
exactly.
It was all
so
circumstance.
Rare.
Yeah, yeah. She brought up something. There's a really great interview with Terry Gross she did last month on NPR.
Oh, are they going to run that tonight, or did they run it last night?
I don't know.
They're going to rerun it.
If you go to the link, if you go to NPR, you go to Fresh Air, it's up right now.
Okay, because last night they were saying they were going to run it. Yeah.
But she brought up a great point that I never thought of, and this goes back to just her. She asked Terry Gross asked her, you know, what do you think of your mother's work? And she said, you know, my mother's this powerful woman. You know, she made money. Her husband spent all her money. She went bankrupt and she made money again. She she came back and like was able to like, and she's, you know, this tireless woman. And then she said, you know what? She said, you know what? If your mother's biggest movie was Singing in the Rain. And she said, what do you think of that movie? And she said, well, for me, I just think it's a brilliant movie because, you know, the idea to do it in the idea that you're doing it at a time when sound is coming in. What a great concept for a movie. So I love that she's a movie lover, that you know, she's looking at movies and she's a fan of film. But then she brought up a good point. She said, when AFI did their top 10 movies of all time, she said Singing in the Rain and Star Wars were both in there.
Wow.
She said, and the thing that struck me was my mother and I were both part of a trio that was two men and then a girl. And I was like, oh my God, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
I was like, what a crazy. So now I want to go back and watch Singing in the Rain.
I've been watching that at home a lot because it's one of my happy movies.
Yes.
And my boys just like noticed it. Like they ran in during like something and now they'll run around the house thinking, make them laugh, make them laugh.
Waff.
Yeah, make them waff.
Love it.
Like they'll walk around singing the songs from Singing in the Rain and I'm just so happy.
Yeah, my daughter's favorite line for the longest time was, give it plenty of hoke. You would hear her walk around the house going, give it plenty of hoke.
Yeah.
I took Isabella to see that when they reran like the 50th or 60th anniversary a few years ago at a Fathom event.
Yeah.
And we went to the AMC and we were the youngest people in the crowd.
Sure.
Really?
And Isabella was probably like 8 or 9 maybe and loved it. Got to see it on the big screen and she had seen it dozens of times. That was a movie that we just discovered, and she would watch it over and over.
And that really is one that looks better on the big screen. If that is the poster child for see it on the biggest possible screen, because the color just leaps off. That's the golden age of Technicolor. It just looks wonderful. And you really see all the moves, all the crazy dance moves.
And it was one of those last great pre-widescreen movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's still,
that's right.
It's not widescreen, but you're still yes.
Yeah. That's
right. So I want you all to, in honor of Carrie Fisher, don't go out and do something where you're like, let's make it about me. All right. What I want you all to do is I want you to watch When Harry Met Sally, because she plays the best friend in that. I want you to watch The Blues Brothers.
Oh, she's great in that. She is great in that. Yeah, it's easy to forget that one because you always think it's just the Blues Brothers.
No,
she's the crazy girlfriend.
Absolutely fantastic. She's like a specter that haunts the whole movie.
Yeah, she keeps turning up with a gun.
Some of the best. I mean, that freaking where the building collapses and they just get up.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It sounds stupid, but the first time I saw it, I was like, that is the fucking funniest thing.
Well,
ever.
What's great about that movie is the sound design. You just hear the bricks scraping on each other for 5 minutes while they're climbing out of the rubble. And then the Peter Gunn theme just kicks back in. Yeah. And you're just like, yes, this is great.
She was great in that.
She was great in that. People forget.
Yeah.
She was Under the Rainbow. Are you kidding me?
She was in the Burbs.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
She played the wife.
Don't forget, she was in all of the Kevin Smith movies.
She's going to have cameo in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
That's right. And now the end of Rogue One will make you cry. So
that really gives it a whole nother resonance.
That's the thing, too. Yeah.
God, the last word of the last scene and the look on her face, and you just go, holy cow.
That's it. She'll be forever young. Polar Express Carrie Fisher will be.
thankfully, that was
a little rough on my eyes.
It was 2 seconds.
I'm looking forward to not having to see that large. That large again.
Well, I was.
Yeah, that, you know that's.
I get like I somebody was trying to make me watch Polar Express over Christmas break, and I was like, I can't watch it. I can't watch Polar
Express.
That
motion capture stuff.
The Peter Cushing stuff didn't bother me as much. Like
it was pretty well done. I gotta say,
it didn't look.
They kind of shot him in shadows, and they
took me out of it. We're gonna talk about it.
I was gonna ask you about
that. What were we gonna say, Renee?
Well, no, because I was gonna say because we were talking about it in the car, on the way here, is that what sucks though is that it, you know, with Carrie Fisher dead now, and you know, with the Star Wars movies continuing on, we'll never get to see Princess Leia around if they win the war.
That's a great point.
And she was talking on Terry Gross. I think she was expecting to be in the next one.
Mm-hmm. Well, they finished her.
They said she had a bigger role in this. In the 8th. Yeah.
Well, she's done. She had finished filming 8.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah. So it's ready to go.
Oh, really?
They're already done with principal photography, so the next year is just effects.
Oh,
but
really?
But episode 9, like Renee said, she won't be around to resolve the whole trilogy. You won't have Carrie Fisher there, which is a real bummer because...
Yeah. I didn't realize I'd shot...
She should have been the one to make it.
Well, what's funny is thinking about it. You know, you start to think of Princess Leia as a character, and there's a lot of moments where they, as kind of... mold breaking as that character is, she still does fall into a lot of the princess tropes where by the third movie they just kind of have her off screen, and you know, she has the whole thing with the Ewoks and stuff, but then it's like the Ewok capture and then she just gets to look pretty and then she's not really in on the last battle, but I mean they kind of really it becomes more about Luke and that whole thing, which is fine. But
I mean Han doesn't have a hell of a lot.
Han
to
doesn't
do
have
either.
A lot to do either.
They
but
kind of get shuffled to the side.
You watch the first, even when she's doing things like falling in love with Han Solo and doing things like girls always do in movies, she's still a pretty big badass. You know what I mean? But what I was thinking about that movie when I was thinking about the I thought to my God, I thought to myself, my God, I never thought about this. She's actually the most complex of those three characters because Han is the rogue, and Han kind of like he does fall in love with the princess, and that kind of changes him a little bit and it softens him. Luke has his arc where he's callow and then he becomes this capable Jedi, but Leia's really the one that has to carry everything.
Everybody.
She's the
and
one.
She's like that thing that you sent me, the 19 tweets about her, and that one person was just going off about Fucking Luke ran off because he couldn't deal with it. Like, Han just went back to being his old ways. And who's, like, the one person who held their shit together?
Yeah, and she's and still in it.
Never tempted by the dark side, like, even once.
And
like,
she's still in the fight.
Put the work in. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Fucking scrabbling as a military commander. Yeah, yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, she just went. Sure. She went back and became a general. And so you think of the idea that when I watched that today, like the line that resonated with me of all my favorite, I thought of all these Princess Leia lines, and I thought, what is my favorite Princess Leia line? Because I've never thought about it. Because Han Solo is my guy, whatever. So I thought, what? But I, you know, she's such a big part of the movie, and I will say this as a compliment. As a kid, when I was most likely to go, I don't want to watch the girl parts.
Yeah.
I never minded. I always liked Princess Leia. I was always like, she was just as big of a part of the team as everything else.
Yeah.
My favorite Princess Leia line has to be, and I thought about it, it has to be, into the garbage chute, Flyboy. And here's why. Here's why. So she basically gets captured, not on her own fault. She's on this ship that gets captured, like Vader. And then, you know, watching Rogue One, which was awesome. It's because
fucking glorious.
You get to see, which basically ends 2 seconds before Star Wars starts.
Yeah, but, for sure. Yeah.
But she's through no fault of her own, she's captured, right? Mm-hmm. But she's, think about it. She's there at when the rebellion makes, when you figure out that it's, you know, Admiral Akbar's cousin who decides we're gonna go attack this base, right?
Lieutenant Fish and Chips. Yeah.
Like Leia's not back on Alderaan. She's there. She's in she's there with the rebellion, ready to do her part, you know, and do what her father asks and get these plans and get them to wherever. So through no fault of her own, she gets captured, right? She gets tortured by Vader, right? She gets quote-unquote rescued, right? Her main problem is she can't get off the Death Star by herself. If she could, she would have, right?
Yeah.
So, but once she's there, she's like, all right, you idiots, like, what, how, like, get, like.
Did you think this through?
Did you think this through at all?
And like, she's all, some rescue.
And she's like, and so what does she do? She takes control.
Yeah, she takes charge of that whole situation.
But the great thing about that line is, into the garbage chute, Flyboy, is that she's just emasculated Han and Luke and the Wookiee, right?
Yeah.
All three of them. Like, they're like the Three Stooges in there, right? They bumble their way into that thing. Yeah. She takes control. She finds a way out. And then, to the cockiest of them all, she knows, like, she's met this guy a minute. She knows him a minute. And she already knows, this is the guy I have to take down a peg. This is the guy who thinks he's in charge. And it says so much about her character and how much, you know. And, God, I miss that era of George Lucas writing. Like, I miss that, like, American Graffiti, like, that early Star Wars, like, he had it in him to
before
do...
Before he became a Deludenoid?
Yeah.
he knew the way that stuff sounded, and it was, you know, they always talk about how tough it was to deliver it. You can write it, but it's hell to have to deliver it. But he knew that's the way those things sounded, you know?
Yeah, those old Flash serials. Gordon, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the whole thing. He wanted to do Flash Gordon, couldn't get the rights, so he wrote his own. And that's the way those things sounded.
God, I really hope that's what she said in her last... I hope that she woke up and just said, into the garbage, you Flyboy, and then just peaceful sleep for Princess Leia. Because that is such a great line. And I thought about it yesterday, and I was like, what is my favorite Princess Leia line? You know, like... I like all the sparring in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's the first one that sees through Lando's bullshit. Like,
yeah.
She's just like, no. Mm.
Yeah, she puts the whole thing in motion. I mean, putting the plans in R2, she gets the whole thing rolling, you know?
So you really, you know, cheers to Princess Leia, the Ender. And, you know, I hate to just break her down to one character because Carrie Fisher was so much more, but... You know, that's the biggest influence she had on me was, you know, Star Wars is the biggest thing that ever happened to me. You know, a nerd was born when I saw that. So, you know, I think
and a million other nerds. Yeah.
Of my reflections of Carrie Fisher are going to be kind of filtered through the Star Wars.
Well, remember what she used to say? She used to have this great line where she says, every time I look in the mirror in the morning, I've got to pay George Lucas a royalty. You know? So she had some, you know, when they ran that, they had that festival. They played Star Wars is part of a 1977 in film festival. And at the end, she turned up with Mark Hamill. And she just had some great one-liners, you know, about the action figures and all that stuff. It was really cool.
Yeah, and then, you know, someone on Twitter, because, you know, a big part of this diary is that they, that she had an affair with Harrison Ford.
Right.
Someone on Twitter said that I'll have to clean it up because we have a...
That was my favorite.
Yeah,
thing
someone says Carrie Fisher went out the way any woman would want to, admitting that they banged Harrison Ford in his prime.
In his prime.
When he was Han Solo.
Yeah, it wasn't admitting, it was telling the
telling
world.
Telling the world, yeah. Yeah, I did it, and then just out,
I was
peace
all,
out.
That's dope, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, Calista Flockhart, I had him when he was Han Solo, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have him when he was earring Han Solo, earring.
Jesus.
Crashing planes into golf courses. There's a guy, you talk about.
Earring?
Earring, that's, if you look at it, Tawny, I'm not kidding, and Renee could probably Google this. Mm-hmm. You can pinpoint the downfall of America to the second
Jesus.
That piercing machine hit his earlobe. Like, that's where it all went downhill.
Wow, that's heavy.
It is true.
I know how you feel about piercings, though.
Get off. I don't mind it on certain people, but just Harrison Ford should not have an earring.
It was a bit desperate.
Yeah. You know, just stop.
I think it's more like when you're Harrison Ford at that point, you can do anything you want. Yeah. Yep. He wasn't trying to court a younger audience. It's like, you know what? I'll do what I want.
Yeah, you can, so don't get an earring. Do something else.
He doesn't pander. He does exactly what he wants. You know?
That's right. Get off my plane.
The American President.
I love that movie, though.
What was it? Air Force One?
Yeah. Air Force One.
Did you guys see the Blade Runner?
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. Yeah.
Did you see it?
I have not.
Harrison Ford makes an old Harrison Ford.
Because they're looking for Decker.
They're looking for him, and yeah, it's Ryan Gosling.
And you just hear Harrison Ford go, I used to be one of you once.
Yeah.
And then he pulls he has the old gun, and he pulls it on Gosling, and that's how the trailer ends.
Gosling.
And then he puts his head through the wall and goes, time to die.
Yeah, yeah. Wake up. Time to die.
Time to die.
Oh,
one of my all-time favorite movies. I hope this is good. Is this the guy that just did Arrival? Is that the same director?
Yes, it is?
Yeah, Arrival.
Because I really liked Arrival.
Arrival's still my favorite movie of the year?
Is it? I still haven't seen it.
Go see it.
It's good.
Okay.
What's the time, Renee?
26 minutes.
You're supposed to say it's time to get ill.
Oh, I keep forgetting.
Now, what's the time?
I keep forgetting.
Did he say I keep forgetting?
Hey, what's
That's
the time?
So great.
I keep forgetting.
It's time to get ill.
It's time to get ill. He has no idea what that means.
And now we're going to get ill.
Is him. You be illin'. I was listening to Run DMC.
You be illin'.
Dude. If I say it's time to get ill, you would want me to say, no, you're supposed to say the time.
Yeah.
So there's no winning with you.
Yeah, I would say.
Probably true.
What do you want?
I would say this isn't a skit, Renee.
You think this is fun and games? This is not fun and games.
John, let me ask you a question, because we have a couple minutes. You were how old when the first Star Wars hit?
I was 16.
And how many times did you see it in the theater?
Oh, probably like 5 times at least, yeah.
And what were your impressions of Carrie Fisher at the time? Were you like, oh my God, or was it just like...
No, I thought she was cute and cocky and, you know, and fun. That was the thing. That character was fun. Mm-hmm. Like you said, that was not a typical princess in distress.
Yeah.
You know, no, we thought she was cute and she was a smart ass. And so that's exactly, yeah, she was perfect.
Yeah. Because I'm thinking of it like when that movie comes out, I'm 5 years old. So I don't have the emotional wherewithal to like. Pinpoint why
we were
like,
old enough to say, hey, she's not wearing a bra. and she has since said that. So George, you're telling me in outer space in the future
that line about bras, her obituary. Yeah. I drowned in moonlight, strangled by my own bra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She said that she tells it so great. She said, I asked George, he said, You can't wear a bra, and she said, okay, why not? And he said, well, there's no underwear in space. And she said,
because of gravity or something.
She said,
like,
he said it with such conviction. Like, she said, like, he had been there and he looked around. It was the way she said, he said it with such conviction. Like, he had actually been to space and looked around,
like,
and said,
hey,
nobody's wearing bras or panties or anything. And he said, you know, what happens is your body expands, but your underwear doesn't. So you end up strangled by your own underwear. And she thought, what a great way to go. And she said, that's the way she wants her obituary. She goes, no matter how I go, that's what I want my obituary put out.
And some publications did it. Like, yeah, that's what they ran right under.
That's nice. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah.
That's so awesome. So awesome.
Oh, man.
And so, Tauntaun, I would be remiss to say from a lady's perspective, and I hate to couch it like that, but you,
but I will.
But I will. But no, I mean, because you came along at a time where there was a little bit more of that. There were more like positive, like female role models. But I think about
Ripley and Alien. Yeah. That was the big one, Sigourney Weaver in Alien.
Ripley's been a lifelong hero for me.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's
and
cool.
That was 79? 79. That was the year I was born.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
the only survivor of that one, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But the first Alien movie I saw was Aliens. So,
and she was in control
in
that one.
Badass in that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Because all the guys are all, man, we're toast, man. was it Bill
Game
Paxton?
Over, man.
Man, we're dead, man.
The worst. The worst guy ever.
He's the best Bill in that movie, though.
I know, he is.
It's great writing.
Game
it's
over,
like,
man.
Yeah,
it's
like, Bill Paxton should only make movies with James Cameron.
Because all these from space like, marines are useless.
To the 90s, Bill Paxton always played that character.
I am the ultimate badass.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He always played that character from the 80s.
No, but you know the
what
one?
A douche.
The one?
Space
he's like,
douche.
He's, that's Space Douche, exactly.
Space Douche, the movie.
Space Douche.
The one movie where he's not... It's not directed by James Cameron. He's great.
Is Titanic?
No! Oh, God. Are you ready to go back? It's the great Weird Science.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that's
man.
Right.
Oh,
he's the
man.
Brother, right?
You're stewed, but what? Stewed,
but what? I think that's
face,
where I first know Chet. Like, yeah.
Chet. What a great name, Chet.
Of and then
course.
I like when they turn him into the Jabba the Hutt creature. He's like, hey, guys. Hey, guys.
Hey, guys. Yeah.
You just hear Bill Paxton's
voice. Just hard.
Good times, man.
Yeah, that is
good
fun.
Times with Bill Paxton.
Good times with
I'm telling
Paxton.
You, one of my favorite 5 minutes of cinema is the scene with him and Arnold Schwarzenegger in the Corvette in True Lies.
Oh, yeah.
When he's like, oh, my God.
I got a little dick, man.
There's kids around. You can't say
sorry.
That.
I'm just quoting the movie.
Yeah.
I'm not a minor. It's okay. Go for it.
He's like, that's my favorite line in the movie. He's like, what about the husbands? Dickless. But it's done in a great Bill Paxton delivery. They were taking care of business. I'd be out of business.
Gross.
Good old.
Super, so gross.
Just with that stupid comb over. And he's got the little mustache. Oh, James Cameron, why? Why don't you put Bill Paxton back to work? Stop making avatars. Nobody wants them. Go back
is that
to.
Still happening?
He's working on three back
too
to back.
Yeah.
He's shooting three back to back. Like
and then
Lord
an
of
Avatar
the
Land is supposed to be in the works as well.
The thing is,
for where?
What if people are
in Florida?
Florida?
Yeah. What if people are? It's been a while now.
It's,
what if people
Disney.
Are sick of it by the time they come
nobody
out?
Cares about Avatar
nobody
anymore.
Cares about
it
now.
Like the timing is off. It was big when it came out. It's going to be what 10 years?
Yeah, almost.
It's like, what if nobody cares?
Devin's
like,
got the calendar out. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a risk.
There's no reason to do it.
Yeah.
I wonder what Carrie Fisher would say about that.
We can only guess.
All right, let's take a break.
Maybe she figures out how to transmogrify, is that the word, into force spirit somehow.
Yeah, force ghost.
Maybe we can get that. Maybe
I
that
love
can
it.
Happen.
I love
force
it.
Ghost.
And my favorite quote of 2015. And we won't get Han Solo back as a Force ghost. That was Tawny. When we were predicting that Harrison Ford would die, or not Harrison Ford, Han Solo would die, Tawny just summed it up one day and said, "And you know, we won't get Han Solo back as a Force ghost." It's true.
So
maybe
you won't get Luke looking at this hitchhiking ghost, going, "I'm looking at some old friends."
Yeah. Oh, that's right. And they all look and smile, and then...
And they're all kind of like laughing.
And right? Then it's Hayden Christensen.
It's like, wait a minute. Why is your head pasted on my dad's head? It's too late for me, my son.
Yes. Tell your sister you were right. All right.
She was right about me.
All right, well, let's take it. What time? What's the time?
Time to get ill.
Nice.
I said, what's the time?
It's time to get ill. What time is it? How long is it?
33.
All right, 33 minutes, perfect. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what the kids thought about Rogue One. We've already talked about it, but you know what? We heard what the kids thought. We got to hear what the grown-ups thought about it. We'll be back after these messages. During the break, I enjoyed a bottle of Arrowhead 100% Mountain Spring Water.
You know, they get that out of a garden hose.
Yeah.
I almost bought seeds on my way over just to torment you.
I thought about that. When I got out of the car, I thought, I wonder if she's going like, to do the pile of seeds.
I was
going to
do it.
I would have taken them and thrown them in the garbage. This would have been the first.
You would have had to fight me.
Should I won't? I'm not afraid to fight a woman, dude. I know that from Princess Leia has taught me that women are strong, and with the help of an Ewok, can even take down a speeder bike. So, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Speeder bike. I know exactly what you mean.
I miss. Do I like the Ewoks? No, but I do like the fact that one of them pets Chewbacca after he blows up the other walker when they're in the. Have you ever noticed that? There's a a really quick scene where you know they do the Tarzan yell, which right. Which is weird. Well, no, when Chewbacca's swinging on the vine, he actually does the. Yeah, but he's holding on to two Ewoks. They get in through the walker, and then a second you see him this. Few scenes later, then they walk up behind another walker, blow it up. They cut to the interior, and the little Ewoks are going crazy, and Chewbacca's doing his like a victory roar. And then they leave it for just a half second, and you see one of the Ewoks just start to pet Chewbacca like a pet. It is awesome. I still one of my favorite.
I'm gonna watch it again when I get
it. And he purrs. Yeah.
Just remember, if you don't think, if you don't watch the if you don't watch. Or if you don't like Return of the Jedi, just watch the prequels and it'll be great by comparison.
It's gold. It's pure gold. When you watch the prequels, you go, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
Why was I griping about the Ewoks?
Why is everybody complaining?
I let my seniors watch a Star Wars movie, like the day of finals, because senior project was over. And there was this, like, most of them were like, five. You know, some of them were like, six. And seven, and then this one kid was like, three, and everyone was like.
What an entangled nerd.
It's not happening.
That's, well, the last, you know what? That's got the last 20 minutes or so of that is fantastic.
Yeah.
Right. The duel with the in the lava and all that.
Now, since we're on the Star Wars topic here, let's talk about what you guys thought about Rogue One, because John and I haven't talked about it.
I loved it.
I got a little bit of Tawny's opinion. Tawny said it was like the greatest movie ever.
I didn't say it was the. I said. Why do I even bother responding like that?
I love that. You were so deadpan. I didn't say it was the best movie
ever. I said
ever.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I really legitimately loved it.
Here's what where we differ. You guys loved it the first time you saw it. I liked it more the second time I saw it. It took me two viewings.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had a really. I mentioned this on the show, so now I know you don't listen either. But. But I had a really bad experience in the theater because if you remember that Thursday night it rained, so they let us into the theater an hour ahead of time.
Oh, I didn't and think you were going Thursday.
I was already well. It was the only day I could go with my family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already sick of the crowd. There was a group of preteen girls behind us who wouldn't stop singing the Hamilton soundtrack, and you guys know I love the Hamilton soundtrack.
What theater was that?
That's terrible.
At one point
is that
they. At one point, they wouldn't stop singing, so I used Aaron Burr's song, and it's the song where Aaron Burr is giving advice to Alexander Hamilton, and the line is, talk less, smile more, and I sang that out loud, and these teenagers used it against me, and they just sang the next line. I was like, son of a bitch.
Wow, that should have done it.
You can't beat teenagers.
No,
that
should have
done the trick.
You should have challenged him with a different Lin-Manuel Miranda.
I should have gone Pacific Heights. I should have gone Pacific Heights. And is that no? That's In the Heights. I should have gone Mañana de Carnaval and then just started singing that.
Or something for Moana.
Moana, yeah. By the way, Moana, fantastic soundtrack. We talked about it a few weeks
Shining.
Ago. That is my favorite song of the year. That is my song of the year.
She likes music, but she's not like a music person.
Yeah.
Not Farrah. Farrah is a music person. Mm-hmm. Candace, not so much. She's more like a pop sort of.
Yeah.
And she's like, I've been listening to the Mono soundtrack like nonstop.
It's
and
fantastic.
That's her favorite. And I'm like, you would like David Bowie. Then.
Yeah. Why don't you like?
You should try it.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially the line where he goes, "Mad with man."
So these kids didn't shut up through the movie. Through the movie,
they were the people that were cheering too hard for everything, like way too hard. Like,
so you missed the next line.
So you missed the next line. And then you have, then you had. Now, mind you, the movie starts at 7:30. This is 6:30. You have hipster dad with beard and cabbie hat and tattoos and skinny jeans and black t-shirt, probably a Jack Skellington shirt. I didn't notice. With a toddler in one hand and a baby in a baby carrier in another hand. An hour before the movie starts.
I had a baby in my theater too when we went. And I'm like, what are you – like I have children. Like
bonus – they weren't even Mexican.
But were they? No. That, but I'm like,
dumb shit's coming all colors. Yeah.
But no, no, no. But I just want to be like, look, you're around these children. Like, you should know what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are you surprised when the baby is crying?
They would not take the baby out.
And when it's a newborn, that just is straight out, I don't care about the rest of you.
But
it's like, are you hoping it's going to sleep through it? Yeah. Like, I don't understand what the
Are you hoping it's going to sleep through the loudest movie of the year? Is that what you're thinking?
Or like, when they take it to an R movie, it's just like, couldn't get a babysitter. So you all have to suffer.
Yeah. Mommy and Me matinees. Google it.
No, but like, and you guys are like, you haven't seen that yet. I'm like, because I don't have someone to watch my kids. I'm going to take them, you know.
Me and my wife and I used to, when Isabella was a baby, we would watch movies in shifts.
Yeah, I'll just go a few you go years see without it, seeing stuff. See. Yeah.
You go see it and then I'll go see it.
Just have to be the way yeah.
Yeah, that's insane. That's insane when somebody brings a newborn.
I just don't. I'm like, what is your? And then they're all like, oh, like struggling to get the toddler and the baby out. And I'm like, why did you think this was going to work? I don't understand.
It's a real lack of intelligence.
Listen, then mom and dad are trying to calm baby by walking him up and down the stairs, like just up and down, up and down, up and down.
How about you try outside the theater?
Then there was a guy in front of me who was just, he was mad at everything and would just, oh, oh.
So at the movie or
he
just
was mad at everything going around, and then but he was reacting in like a really like big way to like get them. And it's like, that's not helping either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So that kind of put a damper on your
so
first viewing.
So everything that I didn't like about Rogue One was magnified.
Yeah.
So when Vader came up with that horrible pun, I was just like, I'm out. It took me out of the movie completely. When Vader said, don't choke on your aspirations, I was just like, did they really do that? Is that really a line? And I know people are mad at me for not liking that line, but it's not a Vader line.
It wasn't. I didn't like that scene either, but I thought that was a little weak. But I think at the end, what made up for it was that last 5 minutes.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
He's marching down the corridor to just like,
fucking
that's
destroying
Vader.
Shit.
Yeah, that's
what
Vader
I told my
are.
Sister. I was like, I went with my sister, and part of what made
sister.
It. Part of what made it.
So you have a twin sister. I'm sorry.
I wish you could see Tony's face right now.
Not having it.
At home, it's great.
I've been teaching now for a few months again, and all my that's my like.
Oh, that's I'll your wait. Teacher look.
Are you done?
Oh, yeah. Good.
That's your teacher.
I was a C student with, and I got sent to the office a lot. So this is going to be a good relationship.
Oh, I don't send people to the office. I never do. I don't do referrals.
That's perfect. Because I would just keep.
Your wrath.
I handle it all myself.
Because what would I be? I would be the guy to go. I'm going to get her to send me to the office. That's what I'd be. Let's see if I can do it.
No.
I'm sorry.
No. But I was with my sister Candace, who isn't super well versed.
She doesn't like movies. She doesn't like music.
No, she does like movies, but she doesn't. She's not into Star Wars, though. She did like. She enjoyed the hell out of Force Awakens. Like she likes a good movie, but she's not like a fan, like a fanboy or fangirl.
Like us.
But she fully. Went like she went with me and she didn't know like the like I knew that it was not going to go well for a lot of people in this movie because of what is said about the mission in you know A New Hope, and she didn't know that at all. And so I was like should I mention anything, should I tell her? I didn't. And she was like, oh, it's so sad. I was like, yeah. And then
it's so sad they all
died. They all died. I was like,
but Darth Vader didn't die.
Yeah. No, but I was like, and then when Jimmy Smits came up, I was like, that's Leia's dad, you know, and like just all these little things that I got to sort of share with her.
Yeah.
And I sort of it enhanced the enjoy. Like part of what I enjoy about Star Wars, and we probably all share this, is like being nerdy about it and like knowing things. And so being able to share that with someone who doesn't know those things enhances my enjoyment.
I see where you're going. Okay.
And there were so many moments for Star Wars nerds. You know, you see the blue milk, you get the guys
that
you get your guy, you get butt face, you get to see
testicle face. Yeah. That's what I call them.
Doctor.
Yeah.
Doctor, what's his name? What's the guy? They bump into Doctor, what's his name?
Yeah, yeah.
Watch it. You'll be dead.
You'll be dead.
I'll be careful. You'll be dead. I thought of you immediately. Hey, it's Dr. So and so.
Well, it's you because
you're just the sheer like joy I got when they explained the fucking flaw in the Death Star. I was like, oh, I can sleep now. You know,
and the fact that he really worked on it. I'm gonna bake something into this that they're not gonna see coming. Yeah,
I did like the reason why he said he worked on the Death Star.
Yeah,
he said that like they would build it without me anyway.
What a sacrifice! Because everyone thinks he's a scumbag for doing it. Yeah,
and he said. If I built it, I would build it with a flaw, and that's the flaw.
And he's a great actor. Yeah. I mean, he really did a great job. I mean, that was a very strong character.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
I did like him in
the that hologram. When Jin is watching the hologram and you're not sure she's going to make it to the end of the message because the building is shaking loose. Yeah. You think it's going to cave in before she gets to the end of the message. I thought that was great.
Yeah, and meanwhile in the background, Force Rider's going, lies! Deception! Run! To the building! Coming down! Run!
And she said, hey, you're that guy from Fast Times at Ridgemont?
Yeah. Oh my God, that's right. Oh,
and then the robot goes, you're Charlie Bird, aren't you?
Yeah. And then the robot says, I'm a leaf on the wind.
Oh, what's that from?
That's from Serenity, Firefly. Wait, when worlds collide. Actor. When worlds
now,
collide.
Now, what I want to know, you made a passing reference to being taken out of the movie when Peter Cushing's character came on.
Yeah,
did that play any better the second time you saw it?
No, I did not. So like. There are two things that kept it from being
perfect.
Liking as much as Force Awakens for me. Yeah. And it was Polar Express, Peter Cushing, which you could have done all in hologram and would have been awesome.
Hmm.
And, there's three. Some of the characters, to me, were superfluous. And it was, you didn't need them past a certain point. Like, you didn't need to bring the pilot along. Like, once he's fulfilled his purpose. You didn't need a big actor. It's just like, get him to where he needs to go. There's no need to bring him along. Because later on, he's just hooking up an Ethernet cable. You just need a guy from tech support to do that. You know what I mean? Mm. And so some of the deaths kind of rang hollow because there was really, I think you were supposed to feel something. But the death that got me the most was we finally got a Mexican guy in the Star Wars trilogy, and then he dies. The Death Star kills him. You know what I mean? So it was like, we finally get a Mexican guy. You know what I mean? We did it. Here he is. But there were things that I loved about it. I love the idea that the Rebellion has to get their hands dirty.
Yeah.
They have to kill, like, they have to kill this guy in the beginning.
Yeah.
He's an informant.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, you know, the Rebellion isn't completely, they're hiring criminals and they're mm-hmm. doing what they need. And then the idea that you had Saw Gerrera and, like, this militant faction
mm-hmm.
of rebels who were just like, they were going to do it no matter mm-hmm. what. They weren't going to do it. That was interesting because he was
like a zealot. And you're thinking, wow, he's getting close to becoming like a Vader figure. He's just a complete zealot.
Well, apparently, I haven't seen it in the cartoon. It's in the Rebels cartoon and in the Clone Wars cartoon. He was actually trained by Anakin.
Is that right?
Obi-Wan and Anakin went to his planet they trained them to be to fight the, at that point, would have been like the droid army or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Fight whatever.
But he's got the mechanical feet and he's got the breathing apparatus. I thought he's getting, mm-hmm. and he's kind of kind of out of his mind with the cause.
I thought
he's getting close to being out of control here. You know?
Yeah, and I think that's part of what the movie was trying to say. It was like, this is ugly.
They're not saints. Yeah.
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 Which I liked. I liked that it was.
Which was cool. Yeah.
I liked that it was gritty. There was a grittiness to it. But there was also some of the most beautiful cinematography we've ever seen. And that's Gareth Edwards does stuff like that. I was excited when I heard he was doing Godzilla because he's a guy. I had seen his movie Monsters, which if you haven't seen, check it out. It's really good. But did you see that one?
No. I was going to ask a question, but go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No. I was trying to remember the name of the planet where that's the Empire's like home base, like the last planet that they're on that looks like Dubai.
And they have to physically send
the
plans. Yeah.
Where the plans are.
Yeah, what was
Safik
that?
Or something like that?
It's easy.
Was anybody else reminded
the beach
of Dubai?
Planet?
Yeah, the beach planet.
Yeah.
Like Dubai, yeah. Okay, I was like, am I just imagining that? Or like,
you know what's funny? For me, that looked like the jungles in Apocalypse Now or stuff like that. That's what that kind of reminded me.
Where did they film that? There was someplace interesting. It wasn't...
No, but I think... Well, to me, it was like... Because it had those like shapes that were like sort of the land had been sculpted into these shapes. And it just reminded me a lot of the way Dubai looks from the air.
That shot when they're like... They see the explosion coming. They just kneel on the beach and hold hands. And it's like, well, this is it. We did our best. And I love that they said, you think it got out? Oh, yeah. It got out.
Scarif.
Oh,
yeah.
Scarif.
Jeez.
Why couldn't I remember that?
It's a great name for a tropical planet.
Yeah, I kept forgetting the name of it. I still, like, I'm probably going to
Yeah, there were so many great... Scarif. There were so many great touches like that. And so... But I think the first 45 minutes for me was really uneven. And I mentioned that before. There were great ones, and then there was a lot of kind of slow, got kind of pokey a little bit. But that last 45 minutes, though, is one of the best Star Wars movies ever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I didn't like – it's well ahead of the prequels, but I didn't
– I put it right up there. I think – I like – I need to see it a second time at least.
Yeah,
but
like
I was liking it even better than Force Awakens.
Did you like it better than Force Awakens?
Yeah.
I'm not mad at you for liking it.
I wasn't crazy about the Kylo Ren character. So this one, I thought, this is a little more solid, you know.
Yeah. That's what we were talking about. We were talking about that on the way here, that Kylo Ren is a deal breaker for a lot of people in Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't make it a terrible movie, but I was never – it's and I know he's not supposed to be. People are like, oh, he's kind of a wimp. Well, he's not Darth Vader. He's a kid that wants to be Darth Vader. But it kind of – I don't know. For some reason, it just kind of – that character rubbed me the wrong way.
There's nothing scarier than an emo kid with the power to force choke you. That's all I'm saying.
But I mean, this one had the feel. This one had the feel of The Empire Strikes Back. It was pretty dark.
Yeah.
You weren't sure who was going to make it, and as it turns out, nobody made it. Really. And
spoiler alert.
One thing that's always
everyone's seen it.
Or one thing.
Did you see it already?
Once, but I had a migraine, so I'm very spotty on details. I know what happened generally, but I'm still
so
like
just rude.
Was that because of the audience? Did the audience give you a migraine?
Yeah.
Well, people had bad experiences with the audience.
What was your initial take on it? Are you a huge Star Wars fan?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your favorite movie of the of all of the?
You're
so
going
far?
To be judged harshly for what
I
you
know,
say
I
next.
Know. No,
you know.
Right
just kidding.
Well, there is.
He's all episode three.
No, because favorite is different from best.
Yeah, because my favorite. The best is Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I agree.
But
I
my
agree.
Favorite movie of all time is the original Star Wars because it was the first one I saw in a theater.
Yeah.
And what I don't understand is people that don't dig. Now you're running into people who don't dig that that you know A New Hope, and you just go, Jesus, that's the template that everything else is modeled after.
Rosetta Stone.
Yeah. So what is your favorite?
My favorite, I would have to say, Return of the Jedi.
Bullsh.
Was that the first one? Is that the first one you saw?
That is. I never saw.
See, there's like a lot of kids at work, and they go, "Oh, that's my favorite." I go, "You saw that first, right?" And so that made you fall in love.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
That's I saw that one first.
No one cared to explain 4 or 5. They just I jumped in 6.
Yeah.
And see, and so that's that I understand. If that's
but
the
you
first
know
one you saw,
you know what's weird though? You can watch Jedi and not know what's going on, and be okay with it. Like you could be like, "I understand it because it has a beginning, a middle, and
it's set up well.
It's set up well. Yeah." So there is something to be said for that because I know a lot of people whose favorite is Jedi.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, that was my favorite because it was like it had everything you wanted. It was a.
Was it the first one you saw?
No, I saw Star Wars in 77. Yeah. But it had everything you wanted up to that point. You know, it had a big battle.
Well, you get to see Luke, like, it opens with Luke being a Jedi.
Yeah.
Like, with Luke, like,
which
kicking ass with a lightsaber.
Toward,
And you don't, when's the first time that happens in the original or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it takes a while in the other movies.
And the whole thing at the end with his dad is what saves that movie. The stuff I don't like about Return of the Jedi, all that stuff with the unmasking and the funeral pyre and the last sort of speech, that really works. You know, when he saves him from the Emperor, that stuff works. That last half hour works for me. It's just some of the rescue stuff at the beginning.
It's touching. Kind of, it's a touching.
I put that's
thing.
Why I kind of I put for the very same reason. That's why I put Rogue One with Return of the Jedi. Like it's that level for
there's
me.
There's things that don't work in the first
there's
half
things that
hour,
don't work
yeah.
for me. But that last 45 minutes, man, you know, is just so like honestly. I describe it this way. It's the way I used to play with my action figures when I was a kid. Like these giant
you know,
battles. Like,
I just keep picturing the Vader scene especially. Like I was like I was almost squealing with delight.
Yeah.
Like there were I just like
you've been waiting for that.
Because you like Darth Vader is like this terrible villain and it's like you never really see him. You see Anakin Skywalker in the prequels, but you really got
it's
to
Empire
see
Empire at the the city in the clouds when he you know, when he says, join us, won't you? That's the last time you saw him kicking ass.
But you got to see, like, you got to see people being, I remember just the look on this one guy's face. He's like, like, I'm going to die right now.
Oh, my God, when they were screaming, help us.
Yeah.
Like, was like,
trying to get the door open.
Like, there's nothing they could do. They were just going to die from this fucking guy's brain power.
Yeah.
As soon as
like,
I saw the lightsaber light up.
Yeah.
That's the way we've been waiting to see him. You know, in action.
Now, the inner nerd in me, though, ruins it. Because inner nerd goes, well, why doesn't you just do that in the first 5 minutes of Star Wars? Why send the stormtroopers in at all? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
inner nerd kills it for me. Like, I can't enjoy anything.
If he was this powerful, how come he didn't do it?
Yeah, how come he just did it? The rebellion's done. You just catch the ship and you just, you know, cut through everybody and then you're done, you know? So, see? Inner nerd ruins.
Wow.
There's so got to
like
be a reason.
There's a name for people like that. They call them rivet counters.
They call, assholes.
There are people that like watch and go, you know, that's the different number of rivets from the last
one.
I
know. Trust me.
Millennium Falcon's got 2 radar dishes.
John, trust me. I hate myself for it. I hate myself.
I hate myself.
Because as soon as I saw that team, and then, dude, you know who's doing it too? Isabella, because they show that, and she's only seen it once. They show that scene of Vader standing on the, you know, after the ship blasts off, and she leans over and she's like, "Dramatic cloak waving in space where there's no atmosphere."
Wow. Her father's a terrible dude.
That's great.
I was like, I hate you right now, but I want to high five you so bad.
Well, how about that? Yeah, but my friend Dave Zach always says this. What's with all the blaster noises? There's no noises.
Yeah, of course not.
It's
of
like,
course.
Okay, then just forget the movie then. Just the movies. There's no movie. There's pew, no Star Wars if you can't hear the blasters. Star Wars. Yeah.
Pew, 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 pew.
But what I love, what I love is it really does, like you said, you really hit it. This takes place right up until 2 seconds before A New Hope. Yeah. I mean, when they,
when are they going to cut it off? Like, when is it going
to, And they hand it to her. And you know, the next thing she's going to do is turn around and put it in R2.
You know, that's so great. Away.
But that laugh before the screen goes black, you know, what is this? It's hope.
Yeah.
Now that, I thought, that was a little too CGI for me. Even though it was 2 seconds, I thought, this looks like Polar Express.
Yeah, I wish it would have been a little different.
The cushion stuff
different.
Was a little easier to take.
Well, just give it, you know, if you would have just...
I don't know what you could have
opened the door and had her standing there, that would have been perfect.
Yeah, it didn't need to be that close for me.
Yeah, you could have just, they could have just said princess and then the door closes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean,
would have even taken like just like the back of her
head.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah.
That would have been great. There had to be a way to shoot that without dead on in the face, because the eyes would always give it away.
Yeah. That's
well, it's always the skin tone too. Yeah. It's like, you know.
At least with the Cushing stuff, it was shot in the shadows and reflections and things.
Some, a lot of it, but then there were some dead on shots. And he moved like the Mark One robots in Westworld. He moved, you could tell.
Yeah.
He moved like what is it, what's the one robot that Dr. Ford goes out and talks to Wild Bill. Yeah.
He,
man,
that's the way. That's the way Tarkin
you're
moved
love it.
In the movie.
You're
I've
gonna
heard.
Love it.
You're gonna love it.
Westworld.
Westworld. Yeah.
So
you're
good.
Gonna love it. As a sci-fi nerd, you're going to love it.
Yeah, because I mean, my God, it's got layer upon layer of complexities. It's just.
Did you?
Is it based on a book?
It's
movie. On a movie from the.
You ever
a
seen
movie.
The original movie?
It's
been,
with Yul Brynner's in it.
Okay.
Michael Crichton wrote it.
The
and directed
show.
It.
Yeah, he
wrote the book.
Wrote the book.
Yeah. And,
okay.
And
okay,
the
okay.
show. And the
okay.
movie. And directed it.
Because that was from 73. And it wasn't based on a book. It was an original screenplay. And for, I think because Andromeda Strain was such a hit, they said, well, if you want to direct it, we'll let you direct it.
Mm-hmm.
And Christ, that's like 20 years before Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's the same story. Guy. It's same basically. Story.
But they go much deeper with it. The original movie was like, what happens? You're at this adult playground like Disneyland. You can kill the robots. You can do anything you want to them. And then they kind of go haywire.
Mm.
And this goes even further. Like what happens if they absolutely sort of like develop like a consciousness?
Yeah, like
now you've got a real problem. Yeah.
Like, what is,
it's really good. You will enjoy it. Watch it on Christmas break.
It is Christmas break.
Ten episodes.
Watch.
Crank it out.
It's 10 episodes. Yeah. I love that. It's all.
I don't. I have like this amount of actual free time because of my small children. It's hard.
Put them in front of the TV.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, they are. There's a lot of nudity.
Let them watch it with you.
No.
Let them watch something else. Put something.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Put them in front of Space 1999.
And then they'll go to sleep.
They'll drift right off.
It'll be a giant sleeping pill.
The one thing I can't figure out at Space 1999 is they have zippers on the side of their uniforms.
Zippers that go nowhere?
How do you get in and out of that? Like, what's the point?
I remember when they were talking about Star Wars, the first one, and they were saying, everything's going to look kind of beat up and used. We don't want it to look like gleaming concrete and people with zippered Lycra. You know, everyone's wearing like a Lycra jumpsuit with a zipper across it.
Yeah.
Because like Logan's Run, you know, that look. All
Boy,
sci-fi
they,
was that look.
They really did make... Rogue, the world in Rogue One looks, I mean, everything looks beat.
Yeah.
The ships, everything, you know?
Yeah, because it's also
a layer
like,
of reality.
Mm-hmm.
It's all jury-rigged.
It makes, and then the idea that, that one scene I liked is when on Jeddah, no pun intended, but apparently it was because it was a giant statue of a Jedi, but where the temple was, you know, it's kind of like Jerusalem. It's like this holy city.
Yeah.
And you have all these.
I figured that's why the Jedi were called the Jedi.
Yeah,
like there was
maybe. But I will tell you what, though, that scene where you just get them blowing, like blowing up that Imperial convoy, that was really cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, the second things go wrong, there's like a crying baby, which could have been so cheesy, and they did it in such a realistic way that it worked really, really well.
Oh, in the movie?
Yeah.
That was like Kong, where they run in and grab the kid before Kong comes in.
But they did a really good job. The way they shot it, it wasn't like, hey, look at this baby.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, no, this would happen because you're doing this in the middle of like a crowded, you know, like a crowded market or whatever.
You must have loved the helmets. They looked like World War II helmets. You know?
Boy, there was so much I loved about that movie. And then, like I said, like I really wanted to love it more than I did.
Yeah.
But there was just some things that with subsequent viewings, I mean, it got better the second time. So maybe with subsequent viewings, it'll get better for me. But but no, don't get me wrong. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm just not ready to say it's like I enjoyed it. The reason being, you know, I know the difference in tone, but I had such a blast watching Force Awakens. Mm. Like I had. It really put me back to seeing the original.
And I loved Force Awakens. I don't know why I'm liking this one better. I don't know, just a little...
Because you like Empire better.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
So it's not like... It's not leagues better, but just a little bit.
I just wish some of the characters were more memorable. Like, I loved Donnie Yen's character, but there was no reason for him to be there beyond...
You know, that was a great character, and he just about steals every scene he's in. I mean, the whole idea that he believes in the Force, but he's not a Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's
I thought
great,
that was beautiful.
A great reference.
He just has faith.
A great reference is they mentioned they're Guardians of the Wills, which, if you ever read the original novel, it was the Journal of the Wills, W-H-I-L-L-A.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a great reference to me because as a kid.
For the nerds, man, that was the ultimate tie-in. Like, that's the earliest scripts were like the Journal of the Wills.
Yeah, for me, that was awesome. Like, that was such a great, like, I got so excited when I heard the Wills, here's what they look like.
I love that it was sort of like, you know, that chant, you know, the Force, I am one with the Force is in me. And the way he would take out all the stormtroopers with a stick.
Yeah.
And then when he dies and his friend, I mean, that was very touching. He starts going, I am one with the Force,
Force
is in me. And you go, this is not just about you're an ordained Jedi. This is like if you've got the faith in it, you know?
Yeah. That was, I thought he was great, but there was no reason for them.
They could have given him more.
Like, well, also they just kind of tag along like, hey, are you coming? It's like, well, like kind of.
That was a little bit flat, that part of, like, why did they end up with them? Should have been, I thought that could have been developed better.
It's always
for sure.
Tough when you get that many characters to give everyone a reason for
being
around.
I was telling Renee, my critique of the movie is, like, if you compare it to, say, even though it's apples and oranges, if you compare it to, say, something like Dark Knight. So the Dark Knight is a great movie that Batman happens to be in. Like, Batman happens to be in this other movie where all this stuff is going on. You've got this insane criminal running around.
And that was by design.
Out. Yeah.
He said, I want this to play like the Godfather trilogy.
Whereas.
It just happens to be Gotham City.
This is a good Star Wars movie, but if you took the Star Wars element out of it, it's not a movie you haven't seen before done. Like, it's The Dirty Dozen, and it's Suicide Squad, and it's all these other movies we've seen.
Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like there's just a little something where it just needed a little bit more for me to go, yes, you know.
Yeah, but I'm all right with that.
But I'm okay. Trust me, I'm going to see it again.
Like, trust me. I'm going to see it 10 more times.
But that's the thing. By this time around, I was telling Renee, I've already seen Force Awakens like 4 times.
Yeah.
Like, I just kept wanting to get back in.
Right.
And I think maybe because the tone is a little darker, you're not ready to just go in and. You know, it's very heavy towards the end.
It is. It is very heavy. Yeah, that last shot with them on the beach watching the fire, you know, the whole planet's going to go. That's really something.
Do you remember that movie, On the Beach? Do you remember that movie?
That's right.
That's kind of what it reminded me of.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Ava Gardner and Gregory Peck.
Did you ever read that book? Mm-hmm. The book is amazing.
They've been running that on Turner, too.
It's called – they made a movie about it, but if you get a chance, read the book. It's a 1950s book written at the height of, like – nuclear paranoia, which thankfully we're about to return to, but
that'll all be relevant again. All those books and movies will be relevant.
What happens is in the North, USA and Russia take each other out, and nuclear war. And these people living in Australia, and there's this basically giant cloud of radiation that's circling the globe.
Mm-hmm. And Australia's the last spot.
And Australia's the last spot it's going to reach, and they know it's coming, and they've got like 6 months to like before it reaches them.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just how everybody deals knowing that they're going to die in 6 months. And it's like everybody's going to die.
Mm-hmm. And so Fred Astaire and Ava Gardner.
I think Anthony Perkins.
Fred Astaire?
He made a lot of movies.
He did some movies that weren't musicals toward like the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm. Let me see. I'll tell you who's on it. I think it was made in like 59 or 60.
Gregory Peck,
Ava
Gardner.
Totally watch that.
Yeah, the book is great.
Who wrote the book?
A guy, I think his last name is Neville.
Turner just did a festival.
Yeah, it's Ava Gardner, Greg Peck, Anthony Perkins, Fred Astaire. Those are your big ones.
And what year?
the book, the movie was 1959. Oh, it's Neville Shute, S-H-U-T-E.
Okay.
It's a 1957 post-apocalyptic novel written by a British-Australian author on the beach. I might have a copy of it somewhere. I can lend it to you. But it is fantastic. Boy. Yeah, it is. It's a real downer, but that's what it reminded me of.
It's a real downer.
It's what it reminded me of. It's just the idea that you're getting ready for this, you know. So what do they do? And it kind of reminded me of, there's a scene in Westworld where the beach figures prominently too.
Yeah.
But we won't talk. We won't spoil it for you.
No, don't spoil it.
What's the time?
I feel like I should.
Where are we at?
We're at 30 minutes.
All right. Let's take a break. And when we come back, did you guys have any final thoughts on, did you want to throw in on Rogue One?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, the one thing that I hadn't said yet was that it's always, like, one thing that means something to me, and this is not necessarily a big selling point for everybody, but I love seeing a universe that has been such a part of my life expand to include so many people of color and women and in prominent roles, and it just is so meaningful. Like,
yeah.
That's something that's such a cultural marker. Like, there's an, like, the people who are making these movies are like, let's do this way now.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's important.
Yeah, which is funny because Star Trek has been doing it for years, kind of quietly doing it for years in all of their casts. You know? But
Star Wars is just now.
But I don't think that, which, and I know people will disagree with me, I don't think Star Trek has had as much of an impact emotionally as Star Wars has for a lot of people.
Unless you're a fan.
I think Star Wars, just by the fact that it was this, that just exploded and kind of changed the way things were done. And even the way Star Trek was done, you know, a lot of what we see in Wrath of Khan and things like that is a reflection of the popularity of Star Wars.
Star Wars, yeah.
But, you know, Star Trek's kind of been quietly doing that.
Well, Star Trek's more sci-fi, and Star Wars has that sort of fantasy strain.
Yeah, I feel like
it, like, less.
I think, you know, Star Wars appeals to a big, I've said this before.
Yeah.
You'll see jocks who love Star Wars, and you'll never see jocks who like Star Trek. You know what I mean?
Because there's no way around it. Star Trek's a little more cerebral.
It is. It is.
At its best, it's kind of more cerebral.
It is. And, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But it's also the idea that if we are going to be the society, of course there's going to be people. Of course everybody will contribute.
Yeah. And that's what's great. It's like, in the future, guess what? Everyone does. They have to get along.
But you're right. It is great to see that in a Star Wars universe. Yeah. Like, oh, there are other people. Like, there are other cultures. There are. And they're from planets where you have a beautiful Latino accent. Where is your father?
And you get the squid heads, too.
Yeah, yeah.
We all get along with the squid heads.
When was the last time you
Cassian talked to you? Andor. What a name.
I wished.
That's
a
great name, huh?
I just wanted more from him. I wanted his character to do it. I, like, when he first killed a guy, I was like, ooh, here we go. There's going to be some intrigue, and what's he going to do? And then it was like, is he going to kill her dad or not? And then after that was done, it was kind of like, okay. Like, it was just kind of, they were just, but you're right, John. It's hard when you do an ensemble.
Right. Yeah. To give everybody their moment. Really tough. That's where the Marvel movies shine.
Yeah.
You got 12 characters and somehow everybody gets their moment in the spotlight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, really tough. And Joss Whedon's brilliant at that.
Yeah.
Because of Firefly and Buffy and all that. He knows how to do ensemble casts.
Yeah.
How do you make it feel natural? Not like, okay, now it's your 5 minutes, you know? You have to make it all sort of, it's really in the writing. That's kind of the way I felt
in Force Awakens. Like, okay, it's your turn now. It's your turn now. It's your turn. And, like, it didn't seem organic sometimes.
Yeah.
Or some guys didn't have enough of a moment. You know what I mean?
It felt kind of like the Dirty Dozen. This felt so much like the Dirty Dozen. You think, well, you didn't get to know every single character in the Dirty Dozen. Some of them got a spotlight.
Shoot, I wanted to know some of those guys that showed up on the planet with him at the end that were like, yeah, we'll go.
That had names. And I was like, wait,
yeah, that was. I thought that was a great scene.
Yeah,
you know how they all kind of said, you know, that was really a great speech that she gives.
Yeah,
you know, and then when he says, "We're coming with you," I thought that was a great moment. That was really, really a very emotional moment.
I really wanted to see some of those cutscenes show you that it was going to be, you know, there were some differences.
Yeah, I feel like stuff got cut out.
Yeah, there was a lot.
And that'll be in the DVD, right?
I hope so.
Was there stuff from Force Awakens on the DVD
that's
that was left out?
That's
going to
make me go, oh.
There was a little bit.
There was just a little bit.
But there was one scene that was prominent in the trailer where she's actually running toward one of the walkers. She's like in the battle on the beach.
And they cut that?
And then there's a scene where they're running through the base and you see like a train and stuff, like a shuttle. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to see some of that stuff just to see more of the, because the production design on this was great. The bases and everything were really cool.
Yeah, and you believe it.
And
all.
I wanted to see more of that. You know what I mean? I wanted to see more of Scarif and what's going on, and yeah. like
Scarif.
Stormtroopers on the beach just chilling.
Yeah,
I love it. You know what was great about this? They brought back a lot of the Stormtrooper chatter.
Yes,
I heard that's obsolete. Yeah, it's about time.
I love that. I was like, hey, it's those chatter. Guys. Because that's what you would see. Like, they'd be walking around in Empire Strikes Back going, what do you think of the new ones? didn't Kevin Smith even do a comic series about two of those guys who are always, wherever the action is, just sitting in the background with, you know, going, what do you think of the
bullshitting?
You know? Didn't they do you remember that, Renee? Did Kevin Smith do a comic book years ago where it was two stormtroopers that just happened to be always... like where the hot spot is, and they're always like in the background.
I would love that.
Their own event.
That's like the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Exactly.
Of
that was the idea.
Of stormtroopers.
Yeah, they're kind of like outside the frame. You know, they got bigger worries. Like, you know, they got to get.
He talks about independent contractors on the Death Star.
Yes.
He's mentioned them, how like they.
Because Kevin Smith did a whole routine on that.
Yeah.
It's just like, these guys are just working on this thing. They're all going, you know?
You also
this is a job for them.
If you get a chance, listen to Eddie Izzard's Death Star Canteen.
Oh, my God.
Where he talks. Like Darth Vader comes into the Death Star to like get a tray, and the guy in charge of the cafeteria like won't give him a tray. It's so funny. It's great. He's like, no, those are wet. And he's like, I am Lord Vader. No, you can't. No, those are wet. You can't. Who are you? I am your. He's just like, I run. This is what he's like. I am in command. He's like, oh, you're Mr. Johnson. He's like, no, I'm in command of the Death Star. He's like, no, Mr. Johnson's my supervisor here in the canteen.
Oh, that's
are you
beautiful.
Him?
What is that
did
on?
You
which
ever
one is
see,
that?
It's one of his stand-ups.
Did you ever see the Kylo Ren undercover boss on the
SNL? It's pretty funny. Best skits ever.
Yeah. It's really funny.
Who did that?
It was Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, and it was David
undercover.
Driver was hosting.
Adam Driver was hosting. Driver. Yeah, and it was he comes in and is Kylo Ren like full like brat mode and is like
so
undercover
great.
Boss.
Yeah. They hear him talking. Like, they hear him talking crap, and he walks up like, "I heard Kylo Ren has a six pack. I saw him
in the shower." And like Leslie Jones is in it, and she's really funny. It's pretty funny.
That's
I recommend
great.
It. Yeah.
I always right. like the robot. Sorry.
No, go ahead. You were going to see the robot chicken.
The robot chicken Star Wars special.
Oh yeah, that was great.
So
oh
great.
Yeah, that was really
when
cool.
You see like the Emperor in the Death Star, and like he's having like a bad day. Like he arrives at the Death Star, and like he loses his luggage, so all he wears is the robe. The robe gets messed up, so he's wearing like stuff from the gift store. And then like he's going down an escalator that's super long in like the size of a Death Star, and it's just like you see the stormtroopers going, my lord, he goes, stormtrooper. He goes, my lord, stormtrooper. He's like tired of saying stormtrooper.
My so favorite then, one of, oh go ahead.
No, but then like he sees like five stormtroopers and he goes like, go F yourself. Like, go F yourself.
My favorite one of those is when he's on Coruscant, the Emperor, and he gets the call from Vader that they've blown up the Death Star, and he's like, where the hell are you? Where have you been? You've been in that ship for 2 weeks.
Like, oh, yeah. It must be smell like meat wrapped in leathery burnt bacon. Yeah.
And then he goes, he's like, what happened to the Death Star? And then he sees him go quiet, and he's like, what the hell is an aluminum falcon? Oh, it's the best. He's like, are you crying? And he's like... Yeah, I know, because he tells him, he goes, what is he like, oh, yeah. You better get back here, or the same thing will happen to you, or will happen to...
I'll tell everyone how a whiny bitch you were when you found out when Padme Bear died or something.
Yeah, he's like, I'll tell everyone what a bitch you were when Padme died, and then he like puts it on hold, and he's like, oh my God, he's crying.
Robot Chicken was the best. It was like breaking that element of just the Star Wars.
Love it. Well, Carrie Fisher's gone. All right, let's take a quick break.
On that note.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about a few of John and Tawny's favorite things from this year. And we'll see if we can salvage this sad year of 2016. Come back with some positivity. We're in a bit of a time crunch for the segment three. Tommy has to go in 25 minutes.
Sorry.
Tommy!
Okay.
So we're going to talk really fast.
Are we doing the best of or the favorites?
Sure.
You have to give me some. I don't remember what happened.
So what
this
we did
year.
What we did last week with the kids when we did the millennial version of the song.
Who
this.
Are the kids?
They're,
are you not listening? We have a whole cast of kids that come in here. John loves them.
They're younger than us.
Oh.
It's Patrick, and we have a Justine now. Sometimes we have a Jake. And we have an Ephraim. You'll love Ephraim's my favorite. Ooh, I said that out loud on the show.
They're very cool. But they haven't seen Casablanca or King Kong.
So. Yeah, John gets really like, what? You've never seen...
What, when you say kids, like what age?
They're all college kids. They're all... Well, no. Justine and Jake are late 20s. And everybody else is kind of early to mid.
And you know them from?
They're from the board game group.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're from the board game group.
Wait, your friend who I met though, what was the blonde? I can't think of his name. Is it not Patrick? Who's the blonde guy who came in a couple of times when I was like toward the end of my
Patrick with a beard. Patrick,
who you said his name wrong all the time.
Yeah, that's Patrick.
Okay, that's
Patrick. Everybody.
I'm like, I think I've met Patrick.
What did you say, Jeff?
Well, Dave. Hey.
Dave and Jeff. I did last week was like we just asked him, I said, What was your favorite movie you saw this year? Mm-hmm. And then John would say
It might be Arrival.
It is mine too.
It might be Arrival.
What about you, Taunt? Tauntaun didn't get to see a lot of films this year because
I have no memory of things that happened this year.
Lucky you.
So this segment's going to go by really quickly.
That was a great straight line.
Worst
year ever.
Let me ask you this. What was your favorite animated movie this year?
I don't know what I saw. I don't remember what
I saw.
Moana?
Hey, you know, let me ask you this.
I saw Moana in the theater.
We never got to talk about this. Did you enjoy it?
Moana?
Because I said, what's the verdict? I have the text. And you,
oh, yeah.
Nothing.
I'm sorry.
Death.
I love that. Nothing.
Just silence. Silence.
I loved it. And if I were at liberty, I would have gone back and seen it again.
Isn't it great?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I ever talked about it, but like I have this fantasy that The Rock and I are friends. And so,
me too. Why is that?
You have a fantasy that her and The Rock are friends. No,
that's a weird fantasy.
Because he's The Rock. He just seems like such a cool dude, yeah. And he just seems so like nice and fun and like.
And you get to hear him sing a song.
And he sings.
You get to hear him sing a song.
And going into it, and I was like, when I found out it was going to be Maui, when my freshman year of college, my roommate was from Hawaii.
Yeah. Now
and
that's
so
what I know.
And so she had a bunch of Israel Kamaka Viva Ole albums that she just, because he's huge in Hawaii, and he'd already passed at that point, but I used to listen to her Is albums,
yeah.
And one of the songs on one of those albums was a song about Maui, the Hawaiian Superman, and that was the name of the song. And so, like, I sort of had a frame of reference for enjoying the character mm-hmm. Maui, you know, like knowing that he was a demigod, and he was this sort of super important... figure in Islander culture, not just Hawaiian.
Yeah, yeah.
Islander culture. So there was that. There was the fact that it was The Rock, who was just, you know, one of my favorites. And the beautiful freaking, just the water was beautiful.
Yeah. Like,
it was just a beautiful
So hard to animate water, and
movie.
It looked amazing.
Yeah.
Did you see it, John?
I did. I loved it. Yeah.
The grandmother character, there were so many things about it that just made it. And I wouldn't say it was like one of the most, like, there were ones that made me weep harder,
mm-hmm.
but like it was just so fully enjoyable all the way through.
You know what part made me weep that really wasn't a weepy part, but I got a little choked up, was the scene where the grandmother shows her, look what our people did, and you know, we were explorers,
yes.
And we were, and when they're out on the seas and you see them like,
mm-hmm.
And Ephraim, who's been on the show, he's Samoan, so I got to talk to him a little bit about it, and he said, you know, they mixed a lot of Polynesian cultures, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. He said, but it was all very respectful and it was all really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that he really liked that part too, because that really, he's like, they charted the entire Pacific without the use of like any,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
any modern tools. This was, you know, thousands of years ago, they mm-hmm. charted the entire.
Yeah, that was a beautiful,
and
really beautiful
that whole
part.
Scene
yeah.
and that song and everything, and mm-hmm. Lin-Manuel singing it and was fantastic, but I mean, Shiny was the highlight. But anyway, that was a great, that to me, that was one of the best. That's been ever since Lasseter took over Disney, they've just been knocking him out of the park, left and right. Because that and Zootopia,
mm-hmm.
oh,
which
so
was
good.
Was one of the, that
so
for me was going to be my favorite.
Well, and that was 2016, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, I think Kubo was my favorite animated movie of all.
Oh, that's another good one.
I saw that too.
Good year for animated films.
I did see that too.
It was. It was great.
True. Yeah. Real strong.
It was great. We, you know, not taking anything away from Pixar, but when you know, now they have some competition. You know what I mean?
I hope Coco lives up.
I hope so too.
I'm really, really
Secret
like.
Life of Pets was really good.
I didn't see that.
It was really. I thoroughly enjoyed it mainly because of Louis C.K. voices the main character dog, and I just enjoy him and everything.
Yeah, he's so great.
Oh my God, he's wearing a Nine Inch Nails shirt. Big Johnny.
Downward Spiral. That's like my high school years.
See, he's a big Johnny Cash fan.
There's a new Trent. There's a new Trent Reznor album, or is it a new Nine Inch Nails?
Record that
it's
came
an EP.
Out recently. Yeah. Yes. It's
Did you like it?
So good. Yeah. I'm a huge Nine Inch. It's my favorite band of all time. So
is that right?
Aww. Yes, it is. So,
they said it sounds like the old stuff.
Immaculate. It just the last record was a bit detached from older sounding fury. It is more of like it's very cathartic listening to it because it gives out this anger that you don't hear in Trent Reznor's voice anymore because he's not a young child.
Right,
he's an older man now, so he doesn't have that much rage. Yeah. But you feel it. You feel his anger that he does have left for the world, and it comes out in the form of apathy, and it's perfect, and I love it so much.
You found his sweet spot.
Yeah, we found it. Yeah, that was he got a little turned into a real chatterbox there for a minute.
No, that's great. That's great. You took off the jacket, and instead of the Superman, it was like Nine Inch Nails. You're like, hey, what's that on your chest? This looks like a job for Nine Inch Nails. Yeah.
What was the video game that Nine Inch Nails did the soundtrack for?
Ooh.
Was it Quake?
I don't think that was Nine Inch Nails. I think that was Trent Reznor. And
it was a Trent Reznor by himself?
I think it might have been him and Atticus Ross. They did many soundtracks. They did so many film soundtracks that have been amazing. They did Social Network, namely.
Oh, that's right.
They did Social Network.
He's turned out to be a real good soundtrack guy.
Amazing. The Social Network was a movie to me that made it because of the soundtrack.
It was a good movie.
After you took out that soundtrack, it would still be a great film, nonetheless.
Oh, it was Quake. It was Quake.
It was Quake?
Yep. And here's let's listen to the main thing.
Quisp and Quake.
Something edgy and industrial.
Yep. Basically what I have going on in my head at all times.
I hear the current Doom soundtrack whenever
That was a great soundtrack. You know, there's a lot of great
I'm going to think of that now when I look at you.
Just in my head.
But you'll be like laughing and smiling inside.
Ever since November, it's been Rage Against the Machine like on a constant soundtrack.
Of my, my stuff, I revisited my rage.
You need to.
And just screamed my head off in the car like every time I would drive by myself.
Well, the nice thing was Rage did a cover of Microphone Fiend by Eric B. and Rakim. So that made me want to go look up the original.
There was a cover album.
Yeah.
I had the cover album, and my favorite thing on there was Pistol Grip Pump.
Oh, yeah.
I listened to
Maggie's Farm.
Oh, yeah.
That's over right. And over.
Their version of Maggie's Farm. Yeah.
I wish I could find all those.
Well, the nice thing about that is it threw me back to, because John had me listening to
Public Enemy.
Fight the Power. So between that, it threw me back to Eric B. and Rakim. And then, so like for the last 2 months, I've been on like kind of an old school hip hop kick, which has been great. Have you seen Hip Hop Evolution on Netflix?
I have not.
Have you seen it, Tony? Do you have Netflix? Okay. Put away this Baz Luhrmann, The Get Down bullshit.
I haven't seen that.
I don't need your shaky bullshit camera. Watch four episodes of. It's only four episodes. It only gets up to The Chronic, but it starts.
Is it a documentary?
It's a documentary, and it is awesome. It's all about. It goes all the way back to the 70s to the original guys who started.
Mentioned Sugar Hill Gang and such.
It meant all that stuff. You're going to go all the way through it. And the beef that everybody else had with Sugar Hill Gang because they were like disco guys. Mm. They weren't hip hop guys. It's awesome. It's four episodes long. It's on Netflix right now. It says season one. I hope they go season two because they never even get to Tribe Called Quest.
Mm.
But it's awesome. Check it out. It's called Evolution of Hip Hop.
Evolution of Hip Hop. Okay.
On Netflix. So check that out. That is one of my favorite things I saw all year. So shout out to Matt Belknap of the Never Not Funny podcast, and to Martin, our friend Martin, who also told me to watch it. So
Stranger Things was this year, right?
Yes.
Did you talk about that?
I liked it. Didn't love it. Is that your favorite thing this year?
It was probably the only thing that I completely like. What did I watch this year? Was this the year I watched Daredevil? I can't remember.
Luke Cage?
I started watching Luke Cage, but didn't get to finish. And I loved the I love the music. The
soundtrack is great.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things of all
year. I started Luke Cage, didn't finish it. Started Jessica Jones, almost finished it, didn't. I just have kind of been unable to, like...
Yeah, I know.
But Stranger Things was the one that I just powered through and then did it again. Like I watched that twice.
Now you're going to start watching Space 1999 based on my recommendation?
Westworld. Watch Westworld.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's definitely my recommendation.
I think that was my favorite thing. That.
Oh, and I promised my friend Angel that I would. My next Netflix series would be The OA.
I've heard good things.
Yeah. So he says he wants me to watch it, and I promised him.
That's brand new, right?
Mm-hmm.
The OA.
Did you get to watch, or did you get to listen to a lot of music this year? Anything good? Anything tickle your ears?
I can't. Not really. Like, I just, I've been listening to a lot of Nina Simone lately. But that's not anything new.
That's therapeutic, though.
It's therapeutic.
What were you going to say, Dev?
The new A Tribe Called Quest record.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Very good.
We talked about it last week. That was my favorite thing of the year. That was my album of the year. I was going to say Bowie Black Star, but here's the thing. I think because he's not hasn't been gone that long, it's harder for me to listen to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even though we just lost Fife from Tribe Called Quest. Something about that album and hearing it again just made me want to keep listening to it. Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of pertinent to the times.
Yeah.
You know. John, what was your favorite new album this year?
You know, somebody turned me on to something just last week. Somebody called Angel Olsen. And I think it's called My Girl. And the whole album is great. I've never heard of her before. And it was really wonderful.
I'm gonna look it up right now.
Really good.
Angel Olsen.
You know, and she's been around a while.
Sorry.
I guess.
No, you're fine.
She was doing like country stuff. This is not a country album. This is, as a matter of fact, they were saying this might rub her longtime fans the wrong way because it's a little different. It's a departure for her. But I'd never heard of her before.
Oh, she's a folk singer, yeah.
What is it, Angel Olsen?
She's going to be at the Wiltern on Valentine's Day.
And what is the name of the album? I think he just burned me a copy. I think it was called My Girl.
Or My Woman.
My Woman. And every track was strong. It's been a long time since somebody's turned me on to a new artist, and like every track was out of the park.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. Wait,
My Girl is the album?
My Woman.
My Woman.
My Woman.
Third studio album by the American singer-songwriter Angel Olsen.
Every track is strong. It's just a great voice, great production, really good melodies, great lyrics. You just don't get that anymore. Not to sound like an old fart, but you just don't get that much anymore, and it was really good.
Thanks.
And, yeah.
Well, because I like listening to music.
But for movies, I would say Arrival. And for TV, I would say Westworld.
Yeah, those are my two picks this year. Yeah. Those are my two. What about you, Dev?
Movies. Captain America Civil War.
Was that your favorite thing? That's not a bad way to go.
That was a good one.
I saw it too many times, but yeah. I still love it. I don't care. I saw it seven times.
It's a really
times.
Good
the
one.
The week it came out, I saw it every day up until Thursday.
Wow.
The week after of the premiere
okay.
night.
What do you think of the Homecoming trailer? Did you see the new one?
I'm so
it looks like
so
we finally have a good
excited.
Spider-Man movie on our hands.
Yeah.
Stan Lee himself has already come out and said this is the Tom Holland is the closest I've seen to a real life superhero in character.
Wait, Tom Holland
is the new Spider-Man.
The young British kid.
He's a teenager.
Okay. He's not British. That was the old one.
That was Andrew.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But he's a teenager, and that is the closest you're going to get to the original Peter Parker. He's
exactly.
a teenager. He really
well,
is.
Well, I'm excited because Holden's into Spider-Man.
Yes, so, like, as he should be.
This looks like, you see the trailer looks great.
And the it tones of what great. They're saying is it's very much related to comic material, is it's taking Ditko, Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
and early 2000s Brian Michael Bendis Ultimate Spider-Man, combining it and then adding a John Hughesian twist to it, which is going to be a smorgasbord of just amazing.
And I love that Iron Man's
Thomas
a part
Holland
of it.
Is English.
He is English?
British, yes.
So that's really? Two British Spider-Man. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't sound like it. You don't. I would
no,
guess.
Yeah.
Well, he's doing
second.
The accent.
Yeah. He's doing the. He has
Lieutenant
an accent.
Sebastian's.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. It's amazing that they can do American accents so well. Like, if you hear what Russell Crowe sounds like or Guy Pearce, and you go, Jesus, they do a great American accent.
His blood's always up. That's my favorite camera.
What's that?
That's my favorite line from. What's his name?
Oh, L.A.
Guy Pearce.
No, L.A. Confidential?
Yeah, from Guy
What's
Pearce.
He, say?
He says,
love that movie.
Yeah. Well, you have, what's his name? I can't think of the character actor who's doing a fake Irish accent. The guy, farmer from
James Cromwell. No,
yeah, James Cromwell. And
yeah.
he says, best to stay away from him when his blood's up. And then Guy Pearce says with a perfect American accent, his blood's always up. Oh, God, I love that movie. Hey. That's a Christmas movie, at least for the first 20 minutes,
yeah, sure
when they
is.
Beat up all the Mexicans.
You can't mention accents without mentioning Gary Oldman.
Oh, yeah, man. Does it. Commissioner Gordon, that's like a great boss.
Except when he says, mount the curb! Nobody says, you can tell a British guy wrote that. American would never say, mount the curb!
Yeah, that's the fact that it's Chris Nolan writing the script. Yeah. But he does, yeah, it's amazing.
True Romance plays a pimp.
Yeah.
Does a really good, yeah, like...
He's great in that. Oh,
love it!
So yeah, he's great in that. Gary Oldman is wonderful. He can do no wrong.
Renee, what was your favorite movie this year? Did we ask you?
No. It would have to be either between Civil War or Deadpool.
Deadpool is good.
Deadpool was great. Yeah.
Deadpool was a great comic book movie for me because it was like stay true to the character and stuff like that. And Ryan Reynolds really like came from, you know, coming from X-Men Origins and then just like bringing in his own, you know, this is my Deadpool. And obviously everyone loved it and stuff.
All great choices, but seriously, for me, The Arrival just scratched that itch.
Yeah.
For the, it hit all of the...
Well, it was so original.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Please check it out.
That was like nothing else you've seen.
Even if you think you're not going to be interested in it, check it out. It's pretty amazing.
I love the fact that it is such a question mark. You go into that movie not expecting anything.
And Hawkeye's in it. So...
Hawkeye! That's so great. And Hawkeye's in it,
Hawkeye
too.
Hawkeye and Lois Lane are in it. Yeah.
Oh yeah,
we can refer to these people by fictional characters they played.
Amy Adams, man.
Oh, I love
always
her.
Great.
I love Amy Adams.
All right, we're gonna wrap it up because we got to get Tommy out of here. No, it's perfect because we would just keep rambling.
Stay on target.
We would just keep rambling.
Ramblers.
So ramblers, let's get rambling. John, thank you for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Tawny, always good to have you back. Maybe next week.
You coming
back?
Yeah,
I would like to. I can.
Of course you can.
She's like,
What would prevent you?
Something comes up with
nothing's
kids.
Gonna come. No.
Like if they're sick or something.
Yeah, well.
Like who's watching them now?
My husband.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Dev, how was the first, how was your first podcast?
This is really nice. This is perfect. I wish I could do this more often.
Well, good. You should because these other guys Renee has in here. Oh, my God.
He loves to do this. Jeez.
Wow, that's an elegant.
Yeah.
No, but thank you for allowing
us. Well, no, I'm glad. Hopefully this helped you out. I don't understand how, but I had to do math and stuff when I was in school, but apparently now you just go to podcasts. That's awesome.
Jeez. Now you sound like the old man. Mm-hmm. What do they do now?
What do they do?
They just used to be reading and writing and arithmetic when I was a kid.
Do you want to know what my final for senior high school English was on?
What's that?
The Hunger Games.
Wow.
You want to know where we're at right
now. God, we're so old.
That's awful.
You guys got to read that?
Our teacher was giving us a break. I'm going to say that. She did say, I'm going to give you guys a break. You guys have a senior project to deal with. Our final will be on the Hunger Games. And everyone sort of laughed, as they should.
And did you read it, or did you just watch the movie?
Mainly watch the movie.
I showed a Star Wars movie. I mean, it's just kind of like the project was over. And it was just like there was nothing
autopilot.
Else to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
R2, put it on autopilot.
No, I mean, next semester we have to do some stuff. But like the last day, it's like, I'm gonna do right now, you know. Everybody's exhausted.
Here's an idea for your project, Deb, for next semester. Try to figure out why I'm the only person that just entirely misses the appeal of Jennifer Lawrence. I don't get it.
Really?
I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
You've seen Silver Linings Playbook?
I don't get it.
You saw Silver Linings Playbook?
No.
It feels like you've seen Silver Linings.
Okay, I'll tell you, this is from somebody I didn't see any of the Hunger Games movies, but I think she's wonderful. Did you see American Hustle?
I didn't like her in that. As a friend of the show, Lauren Nichols, said, she was the girl playing dress-up with all the other grown-ups.
But she was. That was the character.
I don't know. It might be a Sharon Stone thing where she's so good that I mistake the character for the person. And so
I think she's a better actress than Sharon.
Well, no, but Sharon Stone did that in Casino. I didn't like Sharon Stone for the longest time because of Casino. But then I realized, you idiot,
character.
She's acting.
Yeah. And that was kind of the Jennifer Lawrence in American Hustle. She is a terrible. She's a real fly in the ointment.
I don't know. I don't dislike her. I just don't. She's not America's sweetheart for
what's
me.
Appealed to her.
All right, guys. And with that chauvinistic...
that's a great ending to the show. Well, anyway.
Honor of Carrie Fisher, I don't get this Jennifer Lawrence broad. All right. So, guys...
Right. It ends with the word broad.
Yeah. So, for Tawny, for Dev, for John
Martin,
Sandy,
yes.
For Renee, good to have you back. We'll be back next week. And until then, this transmission ends now. Fight the power.